episode of SWB Trawlercast. If you listen to episode 0, then you'll know why I'm referring to this as the first episode, because I made it clear episode 0 was just an introduction. This episode, I'd like to include a bit of content, a little more than just an introduction about who I am and why I'm recording a podcast. Once again, I'm recording on the road, and once again, I would like to reiterate my disclaimer from episode 0. Yes, I'm recording while driving. I have a long commute, and I feel like it's the only time I really have time to record such a podcast, and this gives me something to do while I'm commuting other than just paying attention to the road. I'm recording hands-free. It's no worse than taking a phone call. I have a recording application on my phone. It uses the Bluetooth microphone and speakers through my head unit, and there's really no reason to think that I'm not capable of driving. However, you will probably hear some background noise. You may hear some traffic. Who knows? You might hear people blowing horns, whatever. Turn signals clicking in the background. The sound of a 31-inch maximum traction tire cruising along the road. At the moment, I'm in a town stuck in traffic, so you probably don't hear much other than my heater running. It's a little cold out here in Pennsylvania. Speaking of, it is November the 24th, 2015. If you listened to my last episode, it was less than a week ago. That would make you a loyal listener, and I'm eternally grateful to you for listening to both of my rambling episodes about Jeeps or myself or whatever. I'm once again driving my 05 Wrangler Unlimited. This is probably going to be my studio of choice until I hit the lottery or find some other way to replace my vehicle with something quieter or nicer. Not that my 05 LJ isn't nice. I do like driving this vehicle. But it's not great for recording a podcast. So, I thought tonight that I would talk... I say tonight because it's evening. I'm driving home from work. Also, by the time I get this episode edited and put online, it should be very close to Thanksgiving Day, which is on the 26th of November this year. So it's 2 days away. So assuming I get this online tomorrow and edited and whatnot, you may be enjoying your turkey while listening to this. So happy Thanksgiving to anybody in the United States. I don't know if anybody else... celebrates Thanksgiving. Well, anyway, you're welcome to listen to my podcast whether you're eating turkey or not. So this episode, I thought I might cover a topic that is very dear to me, and that is getting started. So just imagine that you just bought yourself a nice, shiny, new-to-you, or even brand-new Jeep Wrangler. And you'd love to get into this off-roading sport that you've heard all your friends talk about. You'll find that there's a lot of conflicting information as to what you need in order to get out there and enjoy your vehicle. Some people will tell you that it's absolutely required that you have to put a winch on your Jeep before you ever even consider going out on the trails. A lot of people will tell you that all of that crap that came on your Jeep is garbage, and you'll have to replace all of it before you ever decide to turn off the pavement. A lot of people will tell you that you can take your Jeep without any modification at all. Those people might also tell you that you can wheel it as hard as you like because Jeeps are invincible. I like to consider myself a little more moderate when dealing with my own vehicle, especially. Because, after all, this is the vehicle which I have to drive to work every day. Sorry, negotiating an interesting traffic situation at the moment. Okay. So, I have, for a very long time, both driven my Jeep daily and used it as my weekend wheeler. The 92 Wrangler, which I had, which I talked about in episode 0, I owned that for probably 10 years, and for about 5 or 6 of those years, it was my daily driver. I eventually bought myself a little sedan to drive to and from work, and the Jeep got parked in the garage, and I only took it out on weekends and sunny days, and other reasons that you might want to drive a Jeep, like out to the trail or whatnot. But before that, I had to depend on it to get me to and from work every day, and I find myself back in that situation once more because of some, you might call them poor decisions on my own part, getting rid of my daily driver and then getting into that 13 Wrangler that, well, I just couldn't afford that well. Anyway, regardless, I am back in the daily driver weekend wheeler scenario, and to be honest, I do like driving a Jeep every day, but it means that I need to be careful on the trail. So, I tend to be a little more conservative when it comes to hitting the trails about, you know, what I subject my vehicle to. So I try to build it in such a way that it can be agile to a person with the experience that I have off-road, and that it can also withstand at least some abuse. Now, I haven't had much chance to do much of that to this particular LJ yet, but that'll happen. My 92, for example, I never broke an axle shaft. I never broke a drive shaft. I never really caused any severe carnage to it other than one time I broke a leaf spring. But I still upgraded the axles, and I had a locker in the back, and I had lowered the gears, and I had replaced the drive shafts with something a little beefier. I'd done slip yoke eliminator. This was all what I viewed as preventative, because I knew that I had to depend on this thing to get me to and from work. So I built it strongly enough that I knew that my cautious wheeling wasn't going to destroy the thing, and I'd like to think that I got by pretty well. The only major damage I'd ever done to it was that one broken leaf spring, and I had that replaced and put back in within a week or so. It cost me a couple bucks that I didn't expect to have to pay, but such is wheeling. That's just one of the things you have to deal with. But the Dana 44 in the rear held up great. I never broke a 35 shaft, which is what I had in there before, the Dana 44, but I felt that it was a good peace of mind. This LJ happens to already have a Dana 44, so I don't feel like I need to upgrade it, at least not yet. That'll probably come when I get larger tires. So I feel like I've gone off on a tangent. The point is, your wheeling style will help determine whether you need to upgrade any components of your vehicle. And the only way to really find that out is to either really think long and hard about how you drive and how your vehicle is outfitted, or just upgrade the pieces that you feel fail most frequently, like the Dana 35 that I replaced, and then try to wheel within the limits of the components that you have. Don't drive it like you stole it, which a lot of people like to do anyway, but don't be so timid that you're not enjoying yourself. You need to build a rig that you can enjoy, or you need to wheel within the confines of that rig in a way that you can enjoy. Otherwise, you need to go out and upgrade it. So, if I were building a vehicle that I just brought home in a as close to stock configuration as you might find in the used market, or if you bought a brand new vehicle, some things you need to consider, and that's mostly from a safety and recovery standpoint. You don't need to put a lift kit on your Jeep the day you buy it. You don't need to put 37-inch tires on your Jeep the day you bring it home. You don't necessarily need lockers or a slip yoke eliminator or upgraded axles or axle shafts. You don't need fancy bumpers. You don't need a winch. You don't need a lot of this. What you do need is the things that'll get you home safe. And one of those things that I've put in every one of my vehicles is a fire extinguisher. Now, it's quick peace of mind. I have actually extinguished, I believe, two vehicles at this point on the trail with the fire extinguisher that I keep in my Jeep. Obviously, not the same fire extinguisher, but with my preparedness, had saved somebody else's vehicle from possibly getting into a much worse situation than it was in. We were out with a friend of mine named Rob. Now, unfortunately, Rob has a very bad name within our wheeling group, because his vehicle's always got some sort of problem with it. He has a, I believe, in 2000 or a 2002 TJ that's built well enough, and he's experienced. Don't get me wrong. He's actually a really good wheeler. I mean, I've seen him get through things without a spot that I'm surprised. He really is good at the sport. But, like I said, his vehicle, his Jeep, is always falling apart. Last time we were out, he actually lost a motor mount. I've never seen someone lose a motor mount on the trail before, but he did. At any rate, back in, I believe it was 2004 or 2005, we were at Paragon Adventure Park, and he had had some exhaust work done to his Jeep a long time ago, and I don't know if it was related to the work or if it was just that something had failed, but apparently his exhaust manifold was blowing exhaust directly onto his clutch line. He has a manual transmission. The clutch line was plastic, as they are from the factory. And apparently the exhaust fumes got hot enough that they actually melted his clutch line. You know, because we weren't moving very fast, idling on the trail or whatever, it melted his clutch line. Well, guess what's inside of a clutch line? Hydraulic fluid, which is flammable. The flammable hydraulic fluid got onto his exhaust and caught fire. So we saw smoke, he pulled over, we extinguished the fire, and then we went on the rest of the day, and he actually drove without a clutch. So at any rate, he didn't have his own fire extinguisher, if I remember correctly, but three or four of us that were with him did. So we were able to extinguish his Jeep before it turned into a ball of fire, which was great for him, not so great for us because now we had to replace our fire extinguishers, but whatever. So a fire extinguisher is a very important thing to have on the trail. The other thing would be recovery gear. Now, this is sort of a slippery subject. Not that recovery gear is all that controversial. However, recovery gear is only as good as the equipment that surrounds it. So if you've got a tow strap and you get stuck, but you have no one to attach the tow strap to pull you out, you're still stuck. If you have a winch and you get stuck, but you can't reach your winch cable to anything to anchor it to, you're still stuck. So, number one, I would say, and this is advice that I have heard from early on in my own experiences off-road, and I've given to many, many, many people, sometimes haven't followed on my own, which I've regretted sometimes, and I know other people haven't followed it and regretted sometimes, but never wheel alone. If you're going to be anywhere that there's even the slightest possibility that you're going to get stuck, don't wheel alone. There are just so many things that could go wrong. Even if you don't get stuck, you could have a breakdown, you could get a flat tire, you could get two flat tires and not have enough spares to cover your tires. There's just any number of things that could happen to your vehicle. I mean, a Jeep is a rather simple vehicle, but it's still a complicated machine, and there's a lot of things that could go wrong. So, especially if you drive older Jeeps like I tend to, it's good to have somebody with you, or at least a way out. So, if you're wheeling someplace that's pretty close to civilization, it might not be such a big deal to get your vehicle stuck and have to walk out. But if you're in the middle of nowhere, you don't want to be alone. So always wheel with a friend, and always have recovery gear that is suitable for the situations you're normally in. If you like to wheel in the middle of a field with no place to run your winch cable to, you better bring along some way of anchoring a winch cable, say, in the dirt or in the mud. Or bring along some other method of recovery that's not going to require a solid point that you connect your winch cable to. The same token, a tow strap is only as good as the other vehicle you've got connected to it. Years ago, I had a friend that was trying to talk me into going out wheeling with him, and he had a four-wheeler. And he said, why don't we go out? You know, it'll be fun. It'll be a great time. And I told him, well, if I get stuck, how am I going to get out? And he said, oh, I'll pull you with the four-wheeler.
I practically laughed at him. There's no way a four-wheeler is going to pull a Jeep Wrangler stuck in mud up to its axles. It just isn't going to happen. There's not enough weight. It's not going to have enough traction. So even if you've got a tow strap or a winch, but the guy you're with is in a side-by-side or a four-wheeler, he may not be able to recover you. You should really consider wheeling with a vehicle that's at least as heavy as you are, if not several other vehicles of varying sizes, so that when things really get gnarly, you have enough vehicles to get you recovered. Now, the next thing that I highly recommend in most vehicles, and I must admit that I am currently guilty of not having done this to my own vehicle, at least not yet, is, and this is more of a modification than just equipment to bring along, but I highly recommend a roll cage. You may not think it likely that you're going to roll your Jeep over, but they come from the factory with a roll cage for a reason. And that's because the roof on a Jeep is just not meant to contain passengers or hold the vehicle up. Even in a hardtop, that's just fiberglass. It's just going to shatter if you roll it over. Go look up videos online of Jeeps rolling over. Find one with a hardtop, and you'll be plunking down some money for a roll cage pretty quick. Now, the sport cage that comes with the Wrangler is okay in, accidents on the highway, which is what it was built for. It's not necessarily great for making your vehicle survive a rollover. It's meant to preserve life, not vehicle. The way most auto manufacturers look at it is the person in the vehicle is what's important. The car can be replaced. And I agree, to an extent. Now, if you have a vehicle which you're treating as just an off-road toy, you may not care about the condition of that vehicle. You don't care if it's got dents in it, you don't care if it's been rolled over a few times, but if you've got a stock roll cage in a Jeep Wrangler, chances are one rollover is going to destroy your windshield, and then you're going to be in for a pretty expensive recovery bill, or repair bill, and then part of the structural integrity of your roll cage is going to be compromised, because in the Jeep Wrangler, the windshield is actually part of your roll cage. Those spreader bars that go from the main hoop of the roll cage to the windshield, supposedly the frame of the windshield is meant to be sort of a part of that roll cage. So once that's compromised, you need to replace the windshield frame, otherwise your roll cage is no longer complete. Those front spreader bars aren't doing a damn thing for you. So a full roll cage is important. Some people rip the entire cage that came with the vehicle out, and they replace it with a full replacement kit. Or they have one custom designed. That's great if you've got a shop nearby or you've got access to a tube bender. I'm a big fan of the add-on cages. Again, they may not survive as well in a rollover, but they're certainly better than the standard roll cage. If you support the standard roll cage and add on, some protection for the rear passengers and replace the windshield spreaders with something that's more, attached to the floor, perhaps to the frame, a full cage in the front with supports that go, along the windshield and whatnot, you're really in a better position, much better position than if you're just wheeling with the stock roll cage. So one of the other big things that I do to pretty much every vehicle I ever intend to take off-road is find out how to disconnect the sway bar. Now, I drive mostly Jeeps, so it's usually a pretty easy thing for me to figure out. Look at the front axle, find the links that go from the sway bar to the axle, and disconnect them. Not every vehicle is designed the same way, but sway bars generally follow the same pattern. Excuse me, I'm getting over a cold, so you may hear in my voice, and you may hear the cough every so often. So, on the 13 Wrangler, I had simply bought some disconnects. I don't think they were JKS. I'm trying to remember what brand they were. I remember not being very happy with them. I didn't like the design. On the YJ that I had previously, I had some JKS disconnects, and I loved those. They were, the old style separated bar with a pin in the center. The ones that I bought, they were Terraflex. Now I remember, they were Terraflex on the JK. The link was solid, But at one end, it had sort of a stud that you'd slide the link over and then put a pin through the stud. And I really didn't like that setup. It was difficult to connect and disconnect. The stud was... It was difficult to get the link off of the stud. Just, it didn't work well. I didn't like it much. So when I got the 05, I decided to just finally drop the money on a Curry Anti-Rock. Now, if you're unfamiliar with what the Anti-Rock is, it's a complete sway bar replacement. It's not just for the end links on your sway bar. It's the entire sway bar. You take off the end links, you take off the stock sway bar, and you run this new bar through the cross member on the front of the axle, or the front of the frame, right behind the bumper. And then there's new arms and links that go in place. Now, the new sway bar, it's a bar that's able to twist. So, if one side of your axle wanted to move up or down, it can move independently of the other side. But if you're in just normal highway situations where you're just trying to make a turn or whatever, the springiness of that bar sort of acts almost like a solid sway bar. It's not quite identical. You still get some body roll out of it. But on the bright side, it sort of works opposing your stock rear sway bar that comes with the TJ. Even more so if you replace the stock rear sway bar with another Anti-Rock, which a lot of the pros will do. But I feel like it performs better on-road than a stock sway bar because it lets your suspension eat up some of the inconsistencies in the highway. So if the highway leans slightly, your front axle is able to eat some of that up before it tosses your vehicle to one side the way it does when you have a solid sway bar. It also performs amazingly off-road. I had this Jeep in some pretty twisty situations last May when I had it at the AOAA, and it felt just like the sway bar was disconnected. I don't think I lost any articulation by having the Anti-Rock in place instead of having the sway bar fully disconnected, and I felt like I was in more control over the suspension than I would have been with a just disconnected sway bar, which... As I said, I wheeled the JK with a disconnected sway bar, and the YJ, I practically never connected the sway bar, because my driving style, I was able to compensate for the lack of the sway bar pretty easily. So, at any rate, my point is, sway bar disconnects are great. If you don't know what a sway bar disconnect is, and you've been wondering through that whole rant that I just had about sway bar disconnects versus the Curry Anti-Rock versus no versus the stock sway bar, its purpose is to limit body roll. So the front axle is essentially always parallel to the frame. And in that situation, it's great for on-road because your vehicle will corner better and, you know, it won't roll over as easily. The body is very rigid as compared to the axle. The problem is when you hit the trails, or when you try to go over any sort of uneven terrain, the front axle just can't move at all. It can go up and down, but not independently. The front wheels cannot move independently of each other. It's just straight up or straight down. Sway bar disconnects, or the Curry Anti-Rock, allow your wheels to move separately. So, you know, your driver's side wheel can be way stuffed up in the fender, and the passenger wheel can droop down as far as it needs to. It makes sure that your vehicle always has traction within the limits of the suspension travel. So I highly recommend those. Without them, it's a lot harder to wheel off-road. Trust me, I've done it. The first YJ I owned, I had it off-road a few times with the sway bar and track bars connected, and wow, the difference is night and day. If you wheel in any sort of uneven terrain, if you're doing more than just back roads and hunting and whatnot, I would highly recommend sway bar disconnects. I would even more highly recommend the Curry Anti-Rock. It's several hundred dollars versus, you know, $150 or whatever for disconnects, but I think it's worth it. I really do. I do not regret my purchase of the Anti-Rock at all. So that covers a lot of what you might want to do to a brand new Jeep. or, you know, a new-to-you Jeep before you take it on the trails, there's a few other things that you might want to consider. Things like, where would you attach those toe straps to if you had to use them? You know, it's really best to have some sort of recovery points on your front and rear bumpers. A lot of Jeeps come with them from the factory. You can use D-rings in a trailer hitch if you so wanted to. They make a special adapter for your receiver that has a D-ring on it. Do not use the ball on a hitch as a recovery point, because they will break. They're not designed for that sort of force. And then it'll send this ball as a projectile through, you know, the slingshot that used to be your toe strap. So do not ever, ever use your trailer hitch, that is, a ball hitch, as a recovery point. Putting one of these adapters into a receiver hitch that's designed for recovery and has a D-ring on it, that's perfectly fine. But do not use a ball. Do not use the ball as a place to attach your toe strap to. Also, recovery chains are generally a bad idea. There have been a lot of cases where chains have broken in recovery, and then links of chain go flying everywhere. That's really a bad thing. Same deal goes for most ropes, unless they're designed specifically for recovery. Rope is not as strong as your usual toe strap. Straps with hooks are also frowned upon, because if that thing were to slip, the hooks are usually cast, and that's a big heavy projectile flying at something. I know that most winches have hooks on the end, but a winch cable is generally a dangerous thing anyway that you need to be careful around. And they also usually have a nice clevis on them so that they can attach to things a little better than just, you know, most toe straps just have a hook and that's it. There's no spring-loaded clevis on there. So toe straps without hooks, that is, toe straps with loops at the end, which means you need to have recovery points on your vehicle that are compatible with loops, not hooks. So a D-ring is great for that. Some bumpers will have toe pegs on them, or recovery pegs instead of D-rings. Those, I've had good luck with them, as long as you know how to use them. So that's that. So I think that covers most of the basics. Tools. You want to make sure you have tools, because if you're out wheeling, even with friends, and you don't have a good set of tools between you, then it makes trail repair practically impossible. So you want to make sure you have some tools with you. Having somebody along who's done this before is a great idea, because there's a huge learning curve to off-roading a vehicle, and usually the guys that are also novice will just tell you how to floor it through the nearest mud hole, you know, spinning tires and flinging mud and getting yourself covered in dirt. While that's usually a lot of fun, it's not always the best thing for your vehicle or even for you. So you need to be careful, and it's great to have an experienced sort of mentor along to sort of show you the ropes and teach you how to do things. And that's part of why I'm recording this and possibly future podcasts about this sort of a subject, to try to impart some of the experiences that I've had along to others who may not have the experience that I do. So I think we're approaching probably half an hour. Take a look at my timer here. Yep, we're right at 29 minutes. So, I think I'd like to tie it up, try to keep these things shortish so that I don't lose your attention. I think I ramble enough as it is. I don't need to ramble into an hour-long session. So if you've listened, this is great. I thank you very much for listening. If you've actually listened through both of my episodes, well, God bless you, because I'm new to this, and to be honest, there's not a lot of structure here, and I'm learning, so give me a chance. I'm hoping that there's useful content to be had here, and I hope you've enjoyed listening. So, until next time, this is Nate with the SWB Crawler Cast. Thanks for listening.